it's Mo. I am here by myself this week, flying solo. Addy is down. He's got orders for here. We are Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Got orders from Bret Hart to go protect the border from the Americans. Make sure none of you cross the border. Try and get some free health care or something. So I'm here. Of course, you know, it is actually my fault that we are not doing a regular show this week. My fault. I missed last week. Luckily, Stephen Ajami was able to fill in for me, and I really, really appreciate that. This week, again, because of me, I'm not really quite set up to do a show because I'll be moving. But we decided we want to put something up. So since we couldn't coordinate that, I told Addy I would just get on here and ramble for a little bit. Kind of give you my thoughts of some of the things that have occurred in the last couple of weeks, because it has been quite a bit happening in the world of professional wrestling. So we're going to just get into it a little bit here. First off, Stephen and Addy last week did a really fine job talking about Paul Bearer. I don't have an awful lot to add what they said. They give a really nice, you know, kind of look back at his career and all the accolades that the man deserved. But I just want to kind of talk a little bit about the gimmick itself. And you'll have to bear with me here because I don't have any notes in front of me under bullet points or anything. I literally am just rambling, going off the top of my head, just talking about what in the world of wrestling is kind of in my mind here. And Paul Bearer represented kind of an idea of gimmicks that they've certainly fallen by the wayside. I mean, his gimmick was so memorable, and that's it in the end. And in an era where when you see an old school Raw, and the people can get the pops based simply on the gimmicks, and the gimmicks were so memorable, and even the gimmicks in the Attitude Era that were so memorable. And nowadays, the gimmicks aren't necessarily always memorable. I mean, say what you will about Brodus Clay and Tensai, you do remember it. Will you remember it, though, 10, 12, 15 years later? I'm not so sure. You know, some of these guys, I mean, like a Magnus in TNA, or, you know, even a Kofi Kingston, Wade Barrett, tell you the truth, I don't really know what their gimmick is. In the Attitude Era, you had definitely gimmicks you would remember, the Godfather, Val Venus, and all these different guys, you know, even the New Age Outlaws, things like that. But it was very over the top, the gimmicks then. And, you know, whereas those gimmicks were over the top and the gimmicks in the 80s were kind of cartoon, nowadays they don't seem to know if they should be over the top, cartoon, or no gimmick. You know, I mean, Brodus Clay, over the top, or cartoon, really. Fandango, probably more over the top, you know, and then, like I say, some guys you don't really have much. You know, I mean, I know Antonio Cesaro, I know what his gimmick is, but it's pretty damn generic and lame. You know, that kind of hurts him. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is that I don't think they need over the top gimmicks to necessarily be memorable. I think that's kind of gone by the wayside. And as much as I love those memorable gimmicks, and Paul Bearer was kind of a good example of that, of how great those were, and how the nostalgia, the memories of those gimmicks, how much I love them. At the end of the day, I just want better character development. And that doesn't necessarily mean gimmicks. That just means more intelligent story arcs for the characters and more intelligent storytelling in general, which brings me kind of the WrestleMania card. I mean, I don't mind the matchups. I think the matchups as a general rule from the card that we're hearing is pretty good. Obviously, you got the main event set, Rock versus Cena, that one is kind of that's being built well. I am a little annoyed to see. I mean, right now you're getting Brock Lesnar in the weeks you're not getting The Rock, and The Rock when you're not getting Brock Lesnar, and blah, blah, blah. And I think that's bullshit, to be 100% honest. It's the build to WrestleMania. They both should be there every week, especially on three-hour shows, and especially with SmackDown and main event as well to fill. These guys should be on television once, twice a week. It's the build to WrestleMania. I mean, it's, you know, I know Rock has other commitments. I know Brock has limited dates. I understand that The Rock's presence and with the belt and everything like that at these other engagements is good publicity. But I, to be honest with you, I don't care. Like, I don't care. I don't care how WWE is perceived or anything like that. I just want a good show. I mean, I'm very selfish this way. Much like I can complain about the undercard and how well it's done, and you can say, well, it doesn't matter because the main event is set, you know, and the semi-main event and the Punk and Undertaker is set, and Lesnar, Triple H, and those are where it's going to draw all the money and it's going to do a huge buy rate, and I could give a shit. I don't own the fucking company. I am a fan, and as a fan, I want to be entertained, and to be entertained, I want to see that they have storylines for everybody and a plan, because that's what good wrestling is. So I want to believe that the product I'm watching is good fucking wrestling. And the storytelling, like I say, to me, is not very strong. The matchups themselves are fine, but I don't like the way... I mean, I do like the storytelling that The Rock and Cena... Like I say, he needs to be there every, or The Rock needs to be there every week. But I think that the storytelling is basically, I need to get that belt back. I need to prove something to myself. And I've been gone so long. I've worked so hard to get back to this point. I'm not giving it up. And you know, they're two great performers, and they're going to clash, and it's a rematch. I don't have a problem with that. I think that's good storytelling. One of the things that might come out of this that we're going to see that I think. Because we're hearing Brock Lesnar versus The Rock next year, SummerSlam, WrestleMania 30. The main event for WrestleMania 30 is those two. And that makes sense because it's your biggest draw versus your biggest draw, biggest buy rate, right? At the end of the day, though, when Cena wins, people are going to want that rubber match. The rubber match is the match that draws the most. Historically, you can look at any fight. The rubber match is the match that draws the most. Game 7 of the World Series draws more than Game 3 or even Game 1. And the same thing. The rubber match and fighting is just kind of ingrained in our heads through boxing and now UFC and other events that three times a rubber match, that's what settles it. Who's the best? And I think there's going to be some idea that, and I think it's possible, that could actually be the best drawing match, amazingly. But it would be a three-year build with the, you know, The Rock, you know, first off being the referee, and then the match against Cena, and then the match against Cena. It'd be a long, long build for the rubber match over a long period of time. And while it may seem to yourself, well, I've seen it. That's it. The like I say, the ingrained sports culture that the third match is the money match may make that actually the best main event for WrestleMania 30 ahead of Brock versus The Rock. And it's difficult to say at this point, especially since we don't know if Brock's going to get the win over Triple H and how that would affect him as a draw. Can he lose to Triple H? Yeah. I think you can make an argument that this is about the fans, and the fans want to see their hero win after having to overcome, and that making the fans happy, making the hero win, is the right move. I think that's the argument can be made. But ultimately, the amount of losses that a Brock Lesnar can take before people do see his persona weakened is quite a bit lower than maybe you would think. I think if he loses to Triple H, I do think that affects his drawing power the next year. I mean, he lost to John Cena, but they never reference it, you know, ever. In fact, this was John Cena's worst year, right? Like they kept on saying, despite having the highest winning percentage on the company, he lost a couple big matches, his worst year, and now, you know, his loss to The Rock cost him his marriage, which is really strange because we saw his wife on TV one time sort of referenced. And, of course, The Rock referenced his wife. But, you know, in the build-up last year. But now, you know, he's partially responsible for the... You know, if I had known going into this... This is part of my problem with John Cena. John Cena... The Rock feels much more like a human being to me than John Cena. You know, I mean, when The Rock is sitting there at the Royal Rumble and he does that Dusty Rhodes promo... And I know I'm all over the map here because, like I say, I have no fucking notes, nothing. I'm just rambling on. But when The Rock does that promo talking about how he had no money, how his mother had cancer, how he's there, that's The Rock and that's Dwayne Johnson, and I can connect to that. Despite the fact this guy has everything now, he has the looks and the money and the career and the, you know, the everything, you know. I can connect to him. And John Cena, if he comes out and says something like that, it feels like he's reading a rhyme. Anytime John Cena seems sad to me and he does this puppy dog face, it feels like a guy who's trying to poorly act and grab my sympathy, and I don't buy it. And, you know, if I know, and I did know, obviously, that we had John Cena's wife on the show. Go back in the archives and listen, but sort of. You know, and she said the reason for the divorce, small penis. Yeah. Which we kind of suspected. So she has something similar to Addie. You know, or complaint anyway. So Addie's girlfriend, I guess. But, and I do guess. No, we're not that good friends. But I could probably edit that part out. Nah, too lazy. Anyways, the point is that if I had known John Cena is going through a divorce, and I'd be part of the actual programming as much as that might have seemed uncomfortable at the time, it's one of those things that would have made him feel more like a human being. And instead you have it all of a sudden, The Rock caused, losing The Rock caused his divorce, where he's coming out on TV every week and win, lose, or draw, he's telling jokes and smiling. It just doesn't connect. It never will connect. And it's not real. And that's the problem with John Cena at the end of the day. That said, like I say, he still might be the best draw against Rock in WrestleMania 30, blah, blah, blah. Triple H and Lesnar, you could make the argument for Triple H. You should make the argument that Lesnar, though, still does get the win. The Duke, as we tend to say on We Talk Wrestling. At least I do, and then Andy makes fun of me for it. Nevertheless, I do think, like I say, that this is... these matches, I like the matchups. I have no problem with that, even though I didn't think Lesnar, you know, and Triple H was a great SummerSlam match. I don't mind the matchups. I don't think the storytelling, again, in Triple H is very interesting because there's no character arc to me. There's just the same character doing the same thing. Hey, I'm back. I'm roided up. And, oh, sorry. Well, I guess probably... He doesn't. I don't think Triple H has to pass no wellness nothing. I don't think at this point the CEO or whatever the hell his role is behind the scenes has to pass any. I mean, it's actually kind of funny. Right, I think about it. If it's Undertaker, Undertaker, Punk, Cena, Rock, Lesnar, Triple H, and those are your top six guys at WrestleMania. I think, you know, Punk and Cena were the only ones who would have to pass any sort of wellness program. And the others wouldn't even be tested. I think that's kind of telling. But anyways, that's just something, and like I say, just kind of popped in my head right at the moment there. As I kind of became aware of it myself. But nevertheless... It's the same storyline for Triple H. There's nothing different. Hey, I got beat up and now I'm back. And there's no development for the character. There's no admission that he's older now and he might have lost a step, but he's still, you know, he's got to do this just to prove he's still a man to take on Triple H. There's no, with the, you know, Punk and Taker, hey, he kind of flukes his way to a victory in a four-man and now he gets to take on Taker instead of a guy who's dejected because his WrestleMania dreams got dashed because he couldn't beat John Cena. The Rock would have counted, and Heyman coming to him and hatching a plan to do something even more spectacular than main event to end the streak, and then hatching some evil plan and building to it. Instead, you just kind of have you know, him win a match, and then he grabs Paul Bearer's urn for cheap heat. Hey, I got no problem with it as far as, like, it didn't bother me, you know. And it's wrestling, and it's not as tasteless as a lot of the shit they've done, but as far as cheap heat, that's what it is. It's not very original. It's not very good storytelling. And like I say, I think the storytelling to get me behind the matches, I'll look forward to the matches because I think, oh, those are good matches at WrestleMania. Not because the... So, I mean, it depends. Do you consider booking, good booking, to be putting the matches together? Or do you consider it to be building the story arcs for those matches? And I consider it more probably the second part, more building the story arcs. And I just think that these are poor. They're just very, very, like I say, I had no problem with the very main event, The Rock Cena. But Punk and Undertaker, I think it's poor. And Triple H and Lesnar, I think it's boring. And then I look at some of the other things. I had no idea. I don't know. Now, at this point, based on the, and this was going out, being taped on a Thursday just before SmackDown airs, but we know from the spoilers that it's going to be The Shield versus Orton, Sheamus, and Ryback. But then Ryback, after being accepted in the sixth man against those guys at WrestleMania, gets attacked by Mark Henry and three World's Strongest Slams. And I generally like it when I have more than one feud for characters kind of simmering or going on. It makes it feel to me far more real if there is, you know, lots happening. As long as there's still payoffs to things. You know, I have no problem with it because you can start one storyline and build that up while finishing off another. And, you know, if you know what you're doing, that I got no problem with that. But not WrestleMania. WrestleMania is like the climax to a movie. Not that kind of climax. But, you know, literally the climax to a movie. And that's where everything should end. Everything should resolve. This is the end, and the next year begins the sequel. And so I want to see resolutions at WrestleMania. To me, that is where the resolution should happen. Not final resolution, but actual resolution. And so when you get kind of, you never had the, I mean, I couldn't think of one reason why Ryback wouldn't want Shield at WrestleMania. Because, you know, this guy had, what, a couple shots, two, three shots at Punk. And always lost, and it's, you know, a couple times because of the Shield. Has a couple shots at them in the tag matches. Loses all three times, I believe. And why wouldn't he? There was nothing that built to, this is it. This is the moment where, after this, it's over. It just kind of, you know, they have the matches, and then they forget about it for a while, and they start the Mark Henry thing, and then, oh, no, he's going to take on Ryback, and now Mark Henry attacks him, and he has to decide, what, I guess, which he wants to face more. And even though Mark Henry attacked him and gave him three World's Strongest Slams, I can't see that being any reason to kind of want to face Mark Henry at WrestleMania more than the guys who cost you the title at the end of the day. Like, I have a little, it's the latest thing, so at least it's something. But, I mean, you know what would be more interesting to me, and I don't think they're going in this direction, but I wish they would, because it would get a lot of guys in a match and in a big match. Obviously, you could add Henry and make it a four-on-four match, and then you could have Jericho and Big Show on the other side. But Shield shouldn't be teaming with anybody, I don't think. So I don't like that. So there you have eight men, though. You could have three-man teams. The Shield versus Ryback, Orton, and Sheamus versus Henry and, you know, Henry and Show, and they would need a partner. Chris Jericho would be the best choice, except for that he's babyface and their heels. But as far as having an issue with the Shield, he would be there. It just kind of fits. I mean, right now we're hearing him and Fandango, which is the shits. I mean, it's the shits on so many levels. You know, and if Fandango, quite honestly, if he has a WrestleMania spot ahead of some guy like Damian Sandow or Antonio Cesaro, or Kofi Kingston, I think that's just ridiculous. I don't know if that's going to happen. It may happen. That's, you know, just be fucked. So I would not be pleased with that. But, and again, is Jericho going to make Fandango? I mean, you know, Fandango gets the win, big win. That doesn't do anything. You don't do that to Jericho. Jericho should have come back. Obviously, he's getting paid well, and he wants to come back to do something. I mean, this isn't doing something. This is a guy who's not going to have much of a career. I'm sorry. I just don't see it for that gimmick. I just can't, you know, and he's going to beat Fandango. What does that do for Fandango? It's a lose-lose, this whole thing. Whereas, if you put him with Show and Henry versus the other two teams, at least it would be a more interesting spot for him.
I mean, ideally you would find one other bruiser to put with Sho and Henry to be just like that Team Sasquatch again. But I don't think that guy exists right now. So, I you know, unless you're going to bring Mason Ryan out of nowhere, you know, I just don't see it. Again, I don't see, you know, you have the Team Hell No versus Big E now and Ziggler, it looks like. Again, very much just thrown together, which to me doesn't make any sense. No plan for anybody. It looks like they're building to the Kane, Brian finally facing each other or split. Then it doesn't seem to happen, and then they're kind of teasing again, which they've gone back and forth on. The Caitlyn, or that, sorry, AJ and you know, AJ and Langston are displeased with Ziggler. And so, what, you have two teams that don't get along, face each other for the belt? Boring. Like, just, again, nothing there. I don't mind Wade Barrett against The Miz, which it looks like we're going to get now, just like I don't mind Antonio Cesaro versus, you know, R-Truth. I mean, Cesaro now losing all the time. He was one of the guys with the best. I think he was the heel with the best winning percentage last year in 2012. And here he is, still U.S. champion, and now he's getting beat, you know, clean by Daniel Bryan, R-Truth, Sin Cara, all over the last couple weeks. And, you know, who cares? I mean, only one of those guys is going to get a shot at the belt, because really, who'd want that piece of shit anyways, right? I mean, that is how it comes across. The only belts that mean anything in their minds are the world and the WWE title. And, you know, in some ways, the best protected third belt is as far as actually having, you know, things built for it and resolutions. You could probably almost say it's the women's belt. But, I mean, who gives a shit about that? Because the women's roster, despite the Bellas being back and despite, you know, any sort of build towards the title, the women's roster is just awful. Like the talent level is the worst I can recall, right? I mean, the Bellas can't exactly wrestle great. The best wrestler is Natalia, who reminds me of Ivory, who you may remember from the Attitude Era, and that she's a veteran. She could really, really work, but, you know, she's just lost for most of the time, and then every now and then they'll get an idea for something with her, and she'll have a very short run and then just go away, but they won't get rid of her because she's valuable to have as a veteran hand who can actually wrestle. So, you know, she kind of has that similar role. And from what I can tell, it seems almost like a similar personality behind the scenes, to some degree, too. But, yeah, I mean, I don't mind Barrett, like I say, Barrett and The Miz. What I don't like is Bo Dallas, where the fuck did he go? I mean, give me a resolution. Same thing with The Miz and Cesaro. You're feuding. Cesaro beats you at Royal Rumble. You come out the next night on Raw with your leg hurt, Miz does, and gets the win. And then that's it. Whereas it's supposed to build to something. Build to a last man standing. Even if it's only for the, you know, the IC or the US belt. Give me a gimmick match. Give me a blood feud. Or give me the main event on Raw at least. Or give me something where I believe that's it. It's going to end. It's a big deal. These two have been building for a while. If you don't want it at WrestleMania, still give me a resolution. And there's no resolution. Again, there's no, it's just all of a sudden, hey, we're going elsewhere, and it doesn't end. And just throwing a match together on Raw and saying this is the final match, that's shitty storytelling too. You know, and I'm really not trying to be all negative here. It's just there's so many flaws in seeing what they're doing. And I can't help but be bothered by it, because I want my wrestling to be the best all the time. So that's kind of my thing with WWE. Just going to say with TNA, a couple things. I feel like I don't mind Bully Ray as the world champion, leader of Ace and the Nates. I'm okay with that. Some people think it's a shit, pointing out that he lost the Bound for Glory tournament because Aces and A's cost him it, and that doesn't make any sense. And you could tell a story around that. You know, that doesn't mean anything to me. There is no, the biggest problem to me is it was like the NWO. In 1997, they had, after a year of sitting in the rafters, they had Sting there. And he was the guy to defend WCW against the NWO and beat Hulk Hogan. The problem was, well, it was the right time for Sting to have that match and beat Hogan after a year in the rafters. The NWO hadn't lost its steam yet. So now you had the leader of the NWO losing the belt. And they had no idea how to keep the steam for NWO in on Hulk Hogan with having him lose to Sting and then build something separate. So they just fucked it up. And it was started the downturn and you know, the eventual end for WCW in a lot of ways. Because, you know, NWO was still going strong, but WCW finally had to get its win. And so it was just kind of, it just kind of came to a head. And the problem with Bully Ray over in TNA as a champion is, I don't see them holding off and Jeff Hardy being positioned as the TNA guy to eventually get the belt back. And I don't see that guy. I mean, maybe it's AJ, Mr. TNA, coming back after all the, you know, after being away and some sort of story arc. The idea of his story arc is more interesting than what we're seeing, and more because he's showing a vulnerable side and there's more of a character arc, you know, a story in three acts that we're seeing through him than what we see generally in wrestling. But I don't know that, I can't see Bully Ray and AJ in any way. I can't see him being that guy to finally step up and take the belt. And James Storm doesn't feel like it. That's the problem. You can have the strongest heel in the world. At the end of the day, there has to be somebody there, especially when the guy's, you know, 41 years old or whatever Bully Ray is. There has to be that guy who's there to take it. And you can't wait for a guy to emerge because he's never emerged from TNA. You know, and they haven't been creating him, and they just, that's my problem kind of with it, is I just don't see how, at the end of the day, it's only going to do something for the company if there's that guy who, the heel has to get his in the end. Somebody has to be the baby face to do that. And I don't see that in TNA, and that's a huge issue for everything. Maybe, you know, and especially since it's got to be Hulk Hogan's guy, and he's pretty much made it quite aware that, you know, storyline, both in storyline and out in real life, that Jeff Hardy's not his guy, even though he's the most over guy in the company by far. And who is his guy? I don't know. He's sort of on the mic and shows talked well about, you know, Austin Aries, but let's face it, Austin Aries will never be Hulk Hogan's guy, and we know why, you know? He's not, he doesn't look like Hulk Hogan's guy. Maybe, to him, he'd rather be Robbie T, and maybe he could see Magnus, but he'd rather be a Robbie T, but Robbie T should not ever wrestle a match that goes more than 2 minutes. You know, so, yeah, we just kind of, we kind of have that problem for in TNA right now. And, you know, they finally had a champion that people actually sort of gave a shit about a little bit in Jeff Hardy. They built up a storyline so that Bully Ray could take the belt away. Like I say, that's not the problem if they did it in the right way, so the Hardy in the end is the guy to get it back. But the way they've done it has kind of cut the legs out from Hardy at the same time. And, you know, I think that's going to come back and bite them in the ass again. So, yeah, I think that's about all I have to say for now. We're going to have probably this weekend, maybe we'll have one of our promo shows. Me and Addie won't be able to get together, but we have some of that in the can. We have some other audio in the can, some special stuff that we'd be saving. And maybe this will be the opportunity to get those up. I'm not 100% sure. We're going to try and get something up, though, for you guys to kind of fill in, because this is, you know, not what you're used to. I do my best here kind of rambling along, but, and hopefully the thoughts were good, or the entertainment was good to some degree. But once again, I want to thank Steve and Jeremy for last week. He and Addy did a great job. As far as us, of course, you can contact us at addy@wetalkwrestling.com. We're on Stitcher, of course, the most popular app for podcasts on Android or iPhones, and an easy way to get a hold of us. If you haven't used Stitcher, it's actually a really handy thing to do, and a great way to get all your podcasts, not just us, but others as well. Steven Ajami, I hope we have him on again in the future, and he's part of the We Talk Wrestling / We Talk Podcast family in some way. We could work something out. We can subscribe to us on iTunes, of course. Email, like I said, I already gave that out, addy@wetalkwrestling.com. Thanks so much for being on iTunes. You'll find us near the top of the charts. And remember when the first show went up, just a little over 2 years ago now, we had 7 listeners. We're like, holy crap, we got 7 listeners. Who the hell knew? And then, you know, here we are in 2012, where we have over 100,000, well over 100,000 unique listeners and visitors to our website. And, you know, it's become incredibly popular in top 5 in iTunes and all that stuff. And that's just, it's really, really cool. And I want to thank all you people. And if you have any feedback for us about this and you disagree with anything I said or Addy or what you want to see from us or hear from us, or just say hi, we're on Twitter. Of course, we're at We Talk Wrestling. So, all right, that's it for me. I don't think there's much else to say except for boobs. Should say boobs. And other than that, I guess I'm OUT.